Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland, so welcome back to the channel. Sorry, my God, my hair is even crazier than usual. But anyway, so this is asking whether Ukraine can win this war and what its strategy is. Is Ukraine able to liberate Crimea, for instance? Well, spoiler alert, the short answer is no, they can't win, but they can avoid being defeated. And that's why saying there's been some sort of untidy compromise, maybe 2025, possibly later. So it seems to have started the counter again. So this video is about Ukraine. Can they win the war? Can they liberate Crimea and so forth? What their strategy is. So spoiler alert, I'm saying that no, they can't win the war. And I said that from quite an early stage, though they can avoid losing it. So we're looking at an untidy compromise in 2025 or possibly afterwards. So their strategy operates in different strands. There's obviously the military. They're trying to prevent Russia advancing, and obviously they're somewhat failing in that, prevent them advancing too much. Ukraine's roughly 600,000 kilometers. Russia's got not quite 150,000 square kilometers already. Ukrainians therefore got up around 450,000 square kilometers. Russia's definitely going to advance this year. I mean, there's a consensus on that one. Well, beyond that, kind of universal agreement. Depends how much. Is it 1,000 square kilometers? That would be a moral victory for Ukraine. It was 100,000. That's looking like victory for Russia. But even the Russians appear to be moving any forces to the Belarusian border. No idea attacking from the north. They realize they can't have that many axes of advance. Their logistics isn't up to it. Having said that, logistics has improved. So even they've learned from that. That was one of their Achilles heels earlier in the war. The Ukrainians were hitting that also then a lot with HIMARS when they got them, MLRS, and so on. So they sorted that out, considering they now claim to have 600,000 troops in Ukraine, which is probably broadly accurate, when they claim to have about 200,000 at the invasion right at the beginning. So Ukraine, to slow down and stop the Russian advance insofar as possible, digging their own defences. But people said they did quite a poor job of it, partly because, you know, most Western countries don't produce landmines. Thanks a lot, Princess Diana. And I know that came from a good place. Even the US hasn't given very many, because one of the reasons the Suravikin line worked is because it was the densest minefield in the world. They obviously need more mechanical diggers, excavators or whatever to create these anti-tank ditches, more bunkers. And obviously things like this have been dug, but not enough. They're not good enough. They're not deep enough, not reinforced with concrete, blah, blah, blah. So they're fairly vulnerable, these places. So they're going to have difficulty holding the Russians back. The Russians are advancing even now. And they're trying to make a fairly big effort now. Well, I'm reasonably optimistic for Ukraine, because although I think Russia's going to gain ground this year, I think it's going to be in the tens of thousands of kilometers now that the aid package has arrived, because the Russians are making a tense effort now, because since that aid package was passed by the United States about a fortnight ago, some of that military aid is arriving. And that is toughening up the Ukrainian defenses. They can fire back at the Russians. So Russians say, let's gain some ground now, before the casualties get even higher, because then the Ukrainians will have all this ammunition. Because to ship tons of munitions, you can't do that, you know, in a split second, even though they'd forward deployed it, whatever the Americans positioned these things in Poland, ready for distribution. If a Congress voted yes, as they did in the end, it takes obviously a long time to send these things by truck and train from the Polish border to the front line. So as the Russians are not making much progress now, is going to be even less so in a month. The Russians are said to be recruiting about 40,000 men per annum, so per month, and that is about, you know, meeting the casualty figures, because it's conservatively estimated the Russians have about 100,000 killed, about 300,000 wounded. Some obviously will be like quadriplegic, and some very lightly wounded go back to fight in just a few days, and only a few thousand prisoners. The Ukrainian figures half or a third of that. Just to hold on, and then. They're obviously counter-striking into Russia. They've been hitting their refineries, over 20% of their refinery capacity taken out, hitting in Bashkirostan, 1,500 kilometers from the Russian border. So that is hurting them economically. It's a smarter strategy they had before, which was just like spooking Moscow and St. Petersburg with drones, even if it did negligible damage. I mean, almost never hitting military targets. Okay, you close an airport for an hour, and that's a nuisance, but it might even strengthen Russian resolve. And they just hit Belgorod today, that Russian minor city close to the Ukrainian border, supposedly at least 17 people injured, looks like an apartment block. Now, I don't think they're targeting civilians. I could be wrong. Obviously, it'd be immoral, illegal. You might say, well, put yourself in their position. If thousands of your civilians have been murdered, wouldn't you be blinded by rage and just want to hit back? And I might be, but unfortunately, that's not the way you should do it. I can't judge it like that subjectively. Anyway, and some of this I question the value of. If it's not actually hurting the Russian military, if it's not hurting their war economy, then surely it's a waste of munitions. These are in very short supply. So otherwise, I mean, cross-border incursions, they don't seem to have done that in the Freedom of Russia Legion for at least several months. The Black Sea, they think they're being fairly successful there to carry on as they are, denying the eastern half of the Black Sea to Russia, so their ships can't be bombarding the Ukrainian coastline, no seaboard landings to worry about, and so on. And they've got almost no ships. I just thought the Allies can actually dismantle corvettes. These things are 50 to 100 meters long, sell them in parts, and then reassemble them. But they don't appear to be even contemplating that. But anyway, trying to build up their armed forces, husband their forces, they don't suffer casualties too high, and be able to have a counteroffensive in 2025 or something. At the moment, no one's talking about that because that's just so far from being feasible. And then they've obviously got problems with the draft. The draft age is only 25. That's preposterous. Everybody else would be 18. And, you know, they're not getting guys to come back from abroad, but they're trying to. One of the obvious solutions is to say, if you don't come back, confiscation of all assets immediately. And we'll distribute that to frontline soldiers or whatever. And they could conscript women, not necessarily to fight, but to do other things in the war economy, saying you're being a housewife, you're doing something unimportant, well, you're going to have to do whatever to free up a man to go and fight. You're going to have to be a bus driver, train driver, agricultural worker, whatever. So that's a difficulty for them. The political side of it is to keep this coalition of the willing together. Now, already has gone a bit wrong for them with Robert Fico becoming prime minister in Slovakia. Viktor Orban's always been deeply unsympathetic. Obviously, Trump could go back in and that'd be a disaster for them. But Trump apparently behind the scenes gave the green light to what Mike Johnson did. And obviously, some of the hardcore isolationists in the US are not happy with that. But if Trump comes back and there's a Republican Congress, then really the Ukrainians are screwed, because only a minority of Republicans willing to fund them even now, and that'll get even fewer. And by the remember, the extreme left of the Democrats want to surrender to Putin as well. We're not the USA is actually fighting. But even if the Democrats have both control of both houses of the Congress after this November election, unlikely. But supposing they did, if Trump was in the White House, which is not an implausible scenario, if Congress, the both houses, pass whatever funding package, he could refuse to sign. Now that they could overreach that with a supermajority, but that's highly unlikely. I can't think of the last time that happened. So that's all very worrying for them, because if Trump is back or there's a Republican Congress, it's more or less game over for the Ukrainians to keep in the fight. They've also got to convince, that their allies in Europe, it's worth funding them, that this is winnable for them. So, as I say, I don't think it can be an outright victory. I could never see them retaking Crimea, but the Russians are very vulnerable to that bridge. Western countries are just not supplying enough in terms of munitions, the long-range things, or Tomahawk missiles or whatever, to take down that bridge. Could have been taken down on day one of the war. Not enough tanks, not enough anything, not enough shells. As I say, NATO and European Union countries combined next year are meant to produce about 2 million shells. Even if they gave every single one to Ukraine, that'd be only half of what the Russians produce, but they won't give half of them. They won't give all of them to Ukraine. They might give half. The funding might run out to pay for soldiers, salaries, essential maintenance and stuff like that. Probably some sort of compromise, agreement to disagree, some liminality about the illegally occupied regions, agree never to join the European Union, so NATO, but can join the European Union, bring back Russia as a co-official language, exchange of prisoners. Russia's got all the bargaining chips in the shape of, you know, tens of thousands of civilians whom they've kidnapped, particularly children. But there's a rather lack of lyricism. If this actor Volodymyr Zelensky said, well, your son died, so we could get a not that bad compromise, you know, that doesn't really play well on the stump. And, you know, he's an actor. He knows what the applause lines are. And there's a state of emergency. He's postponed the presidential election this year. How long can they postpone it? By 1 year, 2 years? All right. Bear in mind, the United Kingdom postponed its general election, the Second World War, by 5 years. And this is an exigency comparable with that one. So to hang on to 2025, they could maybe compromise with a bit of war weariness in the Russia side. They've occasionally set out signals that the Russians, that they'd be amenable to this. Not that I think Putin would give up on conquering the whole of Ukraine, but then he would build up his forces and wait to what was a propitious moment and go for it. If there wasn't Trump, if someone in the United States was feeble, whatever, European countries reduce their defense budgets. If Ukraine got a president who we thought was a pushover, he could try again. So that's what I think their strategy is to avoid losing any more. As for regaining significant amounts of territory, even in 2025, it's virtually impossible that they'll do that. Possibly they could hang on till there's a coup d'etat in Russia, okay, to the elite are unhappy. Obviously, Putin is not as secure as he might appear. Remember, it's like 11 months since that March for Justice, which some people thought was an attempted coup. Thank you so much for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal. Goodbye. Goodbye, everybody.